Welcome to The Weekly on WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. I'm Owen Anderson, and with me is Jamie Yu. We are the co-news directors for WOBC this academic year. We hope you all are doing well. For today's show, we have an arts and culture section editor from the Oberlin Review, Joshua Jackson. We're excited to talk to Joshua about his on-the-record interview with the Blackberry Poets. Joshua, thank you so much for joining us. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yes. Hello. So this is fun. My name is Joshua. I've worked with the Review for 8 months or so now. I'm an Africana Studies major with an arts concentration. I do a lot of things in community work as far as working with nonprofits. And I work as a creator and a healer when it comes to music and dance and sort of holding healing spaces for folks to be themselves. And I do my best to grow myself as a person. And I would say empathy is my biggest thing in sort of understanding myself so I can better empathize with others.
That's great. Thank you, Joshua, for joining us. To get started, we want to ask you, where did the idea for this article come from?
Ooh, y'all got me a little nervous.
It's okay.
The idea came from, actually, there was an Black Artist Spotlight that sort of held its space during Black History Month, and I spotlighted Max Audet and Cyril Amanfu. And then they, in conversations with Cyril, and then I also follow him on IG. So in conversations with Cyril, I realized you have this whole group, this band. So I really, from there, from the spotlight, I started looking into interviewing the band and really getting an idea of how they were able to sort of do their thing throughout the pandemic and make everything work. And honestly, I did not expect the depth of their sort of relationship to be reflected not only in the interview, but in their music and who they are as people.
Mm-hmm. And we love to talk more about that, especially that the title of this article is Black Boy Joy. And we wanted to ask you, why is that important to you?
What? Y'all got good questions. Okay. It's Black Boy Joy because recently I've actually manifested some really sincere relationships with Black men, and that's been difficult to approach in my life just because of some childhood trauma. And being able to do this now where I'm at a place where I feel I've been prepared and spiritually and gotten ready for some things, now I've been able to feel that love and feel that warmth from Black men in particular and build creative relationships with two Oberlin graduates, which is crazy. So with that, the idea of Black Boy Joy was in my mind. There was also this IG post in particular it was where Meek Mill is and kids were doing wheelies. And doing wheelies in the street is mad dangerous. I would not recommend it. But also, just seeing that level of joy and of Black men and Black boys in particular isn't something that's normally reflected in society. So sort of that reflection of Black males as whole people, and that is really important to me. And it's always been important to me, but it was just in the center of my space. And then I have the privilege to see this interview, holding space for this interview. And just, that was what came to mind during the whole thing. Watching them just be so happy, be so intimate and open, and intimacy is many things, right? So the way they spoke on their creative relationship was very intimate. The way that they were open about standing up for each other when it comes to their insecurities is very intimate. So I'm watching this, and I'm like, damn, that's what I want. That those are the creative relationships that I want to have, not only with Black males, but with like people, period, where that space is held to a point where I can be as open and honest with my creativity and know that I won't be judged. And if anything, that other person and those other people are going to be the other puzzle pieces to this collection of work that we're doing, to this song, to this play, to this whatever. And I really saw that. And I think that composition of their voices and who they are is just a pure manifestation of Black boy joy.
That's really great to hear. And that's totally important because it is an ongoing topic. Like, conversations like these shouldn't stop with the end of Black History Month. It should be ongoing.
So the Blackberry Poets say they formed like in the last 8 months. Do you think this new collaboration is a unique occurrence during the pandemic? Why or why not?
I don't think it's unique in the sense where I saw an importance to create space and create networks for people. I know that the pandemic as an event has taken quite a bit. There are things that happened since it began that have taken quite a bit. And through the things that are taken, I find that people, and particularly Black people, that maintain this tenacity to create culture and to create, period, found ways to continue to build those networks and hold spaces during this pandemic. I've seen 7-figure businesses be built just watching people on Instagram. I've seen kids come out and do their thing and be who they are. So there's a level of inspiration somehow throughout all of this. So seeing them as the Blackberry Poets engage in what they have isn't new, but it is refreshing. It is, of course, welcomed. And I think it may be surprising in the way of it was spontaneous in the way that they formed what they did, but the idea of something being created out of something so dramatic and pivotal and difficult has been a continuity within Black culture, particularly, and within this country.
You know, you're saying that we have good questions, but you've been delivering some really great answers.
I really appreciate y'all for even like reaching out for this.
Oh yeah, of course. We'd love to have, we love having you on here. So Joshua, we want to ask more about the OTR in particular. So since it is a transcribed interview, how did you go about asking questions that would both inform the reader and give the Blackberry Poets space to talk in the conversation?
The thing is, because the community is on both sides of reading these things and also being written about, I often find myself focusing on the people that I'm writing about rather than the reader, because I know the reader is the people. And if you're focusing on the people, then the readers will be taken care of. So within those questions that I was asking, I wanted to center them as people. I wanted to get at what caused this beautiful group and collection of creators to get together. I wanted to center them as creatives. I wanted to center, honestly, the heart of who they were, because at the end of the day, Cyril, I've seen firsthand how Cyril creates community. I know that Max's voice ties people together. I've grown to realize just how prolific Mark is. So if Mark can bring his bass and bring a block together, and Max can bring his voice and bring a block together, and Cyril can bring his guitar and his playwriting and his voice and bring a block together, it's like, if I focus on them and they are from those blocks, then the block is going to be taken care of. So I think centering the people is the purpose in a lot of the things I do, and especially getting to the point where recognizing the responsibility of the job and how sort of difficult, not sort of, it is difficult to write a piece and then push it through production as an editor. So I find myself, especially now, I only write if I feel that my take, that I can deliver something with purpose for the people. So I felt like I was in that position. If I am in that position, again, centering the people is the purpose.
Yeah, I actually wanted to ask, while you were talking, how well did you know Max, Cyril, and Mark before this interview?
Here's the thing. I hardly knew them. I couldn't say I knew them really at all. I had an opportunity to see certain aspects of them as creatives that really touched me, though. So in my first year, I remember seeing Mark as a bassist, and I haven't had a chance to see a lot of Black musicians up close. I applied to get like secondary lessons at the conservatory and was rejected. And Dr. Ray, I call her Auntie Andrews. That's Dr. Courtney Savali Andrews for everybody else, but that's Auntie A for me. She told me, she was like, you may be playing in a way that they can't teach because they're taught in a very specific way to in order to sort of redistribute the canon of the conservatory. And the canon of the conservatory is really white supremacist, like, honestly, period. It supports a particular construct of way of music that has been associated and tied to whiteness, and it's been carried out that way generation through generation. So the way that I play does not support that. That said, seeing Black creatives and Black musicians in particular put something in my heart when it came to Mark. Now, I had the absolute privilege of being a part of the sort of production team for the piece In the 11th Hour by Mia Byers and Jairus Owens. Mia wrote it. Jairus, they both wrote it, but Mia primarily wrote it, and Jairus was the main only actor in it. Mia was directing it, and Cyril was the production manager, I believe. And watching the way Cyril worked, watching the level of maturity and artistry, you got to think about, this is my first year in college. I come from a place where respect is important, and I come from a place where professionality is important, but seeing that in other people my age or a little bit older was really different for me. Seeing somebody like Cyril that can do so many things creatively taught me that everything that I do creatively can hold space. I just have to figure it out for myself. So Cyril was an inspiration right off the bat, along with, of course, me and Jairus. When it comes to Max Auday, now, I dream to produce, well, I will. I will produce music around the world, you know, and that's something that I manifested and I see coming. But seeing somebody take out their laptop and headphones on a random trip to like Crocker Park and go into Starbucks, take out their laptop and their headphones and just start making music, I was like, that, like, I saw myself in Max Auday, and I saw one of the best versions of myself in Max Auday. And so, like, these three people were people that I admired from afar, and having an opportunity to get up close to them and be like, whoa, like these, this is who I am, you know? I will get to the point where that is who I am for somebody else, and I want to, and I want to grow into that and be better for that as a person, as a musician, as a creative, as a healer, and embody the inspiration that they've embodied for me.
That's a great answer, thank you. And I do recognize what you're saying about the con. I'm not a student there myself, but I remember in the article there was a similar sentiment. I just don't remember who said it, but yeah.
Right. Reading the article, I definitely get this sense that I think you're talking about where each of these artists as individuals are really amazing. And when they come together, it's even more amazing, obviously. How did you approach interviewing a group of people like this as opposed to just one guest?
When we work as any sort of group, the best groups sort of move as one body at least, and they provide each of their own individual roles. And even the person that seems like the leader is really just another role. You're still on the team. You may have a creative vision that pushes people forward, but that's your role. And what I saw with these three, I saw three leaders from afar, and watching them together, you see that they allow themselves to move within those roles. Each of them can lay out a record in an hour. I feel very comfortable saying that either one of them can lay out a record in an hour. They can lay out the instrumentation, the vocals, write it, chorus, all that. Now, I saw that they allow themselves to move within, okay, maybe I'm just writing the words today. Maybe I need help on the words. Maybe you doing the instrumentation, or maybe like, whoa, like, damn, you did that whole song. Let's knock that out right now. So when it came to approaching the questions for the interview, I think I approached it from two ways of this is one body. So each question I'm asking is really for the body of the band as a whole, but also the other side of that, each of the question is for every individual to acknowledge their roles that they bring to the table and how they sort of execute them. And one of the most beautiful things about that was I don't think they answered one question without somebody talking about somebody else, without somebody being like, uh-uh. You need to speak on this because you executed that, you handled that, you brought light to that and life to that. And so it worked in this way where if one person was being modest, the other person backed them up. And that allowed everyone to be modest and that allowed everyone to be humble because the person right next to them is going to be like, hold on, they did this, this, and this. And it was crazy. So throughout that interview, I know y'all watched it, but it's like just seeing the chemistry. I mean, they embodied chemistry. Just seeing the chemistry of who they are, I needed to respect that. You know, I needed to respect each of them as individuals as well as what they created as a band.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like because of Zoom, I feel like we've kind of forgotten what in-person interaction feels like. But honestly, watching them, it really felt like they were all in the same room, just kind of riffing off each other. And it was really great to see all that energy. So while we're on the subject of the OTR, we wanted to ask you, did any parts of the interview stick out to you or that you liked in particular?
There were so many places. I mean, there were some places where I cried. There were some places where I wanted to. There were so many places where I laughed out of joy. I think where the first time it happened was, and this may not really be in the article. Again, like things have to be chopped. Editing is not easy. The Max put on a held an event for the summer. Like he talked about how you know, he didn't have those creative spaces to inspire him. And then he made the creative space. He created the creative space as a creator himself. So, and he was kind of downplaying it. And both Cyril and Mark were like, yo, like, you did that. And you had it where you were respecting Black creatives, which does not happen often, period. And you paid them, which does not happen often, period. And it's like, bro, come on. There was a moment where they were talking about Cyril laying down a record. These are literally, because I watch, I live, breathe the energy of watching interviews by Kendrick Lamar, with Kendrick Lamar, Pharrell, Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, Nikki Giovanni. And it's like, you hear these stories of like, you did what? In what amount of time? And it's, you made that record, you made that play, that's when you wrote that book. Like, and having those moments, it's like watching those moments with them was like being close to that energy of who we are inherently, all of us, period, as creators and creatives. So hearing like that Cyril did that, hearing that Mark did that, hearing that like Mark can like hear something and just play it like that, hearing the love that they gave Max as a vocalist, the love that they gave Mark as an instrumentalist, the love that they gave Cyril as just like a multi-talented creative, was incredible. And I think the moments where they shared that love, and like those heightened moments when they did it, because they did it throughout it, but like the heightened moments where they did it were my favorite moments of like, damn, like this is who I am as one of these students at Oberlin. And approaching that for me, again, this is why it's such a privilege to do that interview in the first place, bro. Like, the fact that my name is on the OTR is mad weird, for real. Like, I'm being so serious, because like, it was an honor to be so close to that interview and like even make those questions for them and like hold that space, because it was so inspiring for me as a creative.
Joshua, you kind of mentioned this about how editing is hard. Were there some aspects of the interview that you just couldn't put in the article because of space, but still resonated with you?
Come on, man. What kind of question is that? Yeah. I would say so much isn't here. The key to editing something like this is what was there the most, and how can we carve everything out? This is what I tell writers, and this is what I have to remind myself as a writer. What do we really want to get at, and how can we carve out space for that thing and shave off everything else? And this is done, there's not an art form this isn't done in, honest to God. So as a poet, I have to do this more. As a pianist, I need to do this more. Or I should engage in it. It would be a good idea. Because with this, just the name, Black Boy Joy, I put myself in a position where it would be, I was prompt to find the places that reflect that energy of Black Boy Joy. So when Mark says, we're brothers, honestly, we do the music thing and that's great. But at the end of the day, it's not just about music. We love hanging out with each other, talking to each other, being friends. It's the joy of being with Max and Cyril. It's inspiring. Like that, I can't tell y'all how much that was cut. And I had to like really get at what he's saying there. And that is what he's saying. And I have a habit of like, I'll send the final product to people, so they can always like let me know if something's not right with the voicing of things. But it's like, those places with things I couldn't include were that extra energy that falls into a conversational space, you know, because I have to write this, or I have to edit this to the point where somebody can just like pull it up and read it real quick, because most people aren't going to go past like the first or second question. So I have to create it. I have to do it where, like, part of the job is the way that you respect the people that you're writing about or the piece as a whole is carving it out and shaving it down to make sure that, like, in this age where we all have this squirrel attention span, and I know I'm generalizing, but please, somebody tell me I'm wrong. We have this squirrel attention span, and somebody needs to be able to, like, pull this up, and I need to carve out a really good part at the beginning to make sure they stay, and I need to keep it going to make sure they stay, and then, like, end on something that engages them with this group as a whole. So, like, look out for more jam sessions and the outdoor performance as well. Like, there were just parts where, I mean, you can't, I don't know if you could put it into words, man, because you're looking at people, like, I'm looking at people that have grown up in similar situations as I, with, like, PWI environments, where you have to figure out how to be yourself. You know, you have to figure out, because me personally, I've made myself small in so many circumstances that it's really, I wouldn't say interrupted my progression as a human being, but I see the consequences of it. You know, I see the places where I need to grow. I see the places where I'm like, damn, I could have kept in contact with that person. And I see the consequences of my ego coming out as, like, so insecure. And that's a product of this environment where I've denied my masculinity, I've denied my femininity, I've denied myself as a Black person, as a Black man, I've denied myself as a creator, as a musician, as an artist, as a poet, and I've dwindled myself down to the point where depression was just normal. And for me, it meant on a spiritual level that there's something there that I need to drive out of myself in order to become myself and start that and continue that process of becoming the person that I want to be. And recognizing that, like, yeah, I may never speak to those people again, but that's okay, because I'm on my own journey and hopefully I taught them something. And I definitely have to engage in it in a way where I learn something and grow beyond it and heal my traumas and become who I am to the fullest, so that everything that I touch is a product of my purpose rather than a product of my ego. So that reading something like this reminds me that it's possible. You know, it's possible to find those groups of people where, like, you're in that creative marriage with each other and you see each other more than you see your parents and you see each other more than you see your friends and you become family because you're creating together. I mean, that process of that's so intimate. That's one of the most intimate things. That's why it's difficult to mess with people when they have an ego to create. And so, yeah, I would say that, like, the things that were cut out were the things that are for them and I and whoever and y'all, because y'all watched it. But those are the things where, you know, if somebody would take the time to watch this interview that I put in my archives as a creative, those Oberlin archives, I should give it to the Oberlin archives. Oh my God, that needs to happen. That special energy is for those people that really want to look back at who these people were and carry that energy with them.
Thank you for your vulnerability as well. So we want to pivot a bit and talk to you more about your position on the review, and just ask, like, how has your experience been writing and editing for the review during a pandemic, and especially since, you know, this is the first time you've been a section editor?
I'm supposed to be here because it's one of those shots that I took and I didn't know how it was going to turn out, but it's one of those, I have faith that I will be wherever I belong. And then I've been prompted to sort of step up into the role even more and do a better job. And I feel like I've done that as far as, like, organizing writers, keeping everybody on track, running up check-ins, making sure we have photos, making sure the pitches are solid. If I need to write, I write. if I can send the story out to this person knowing that they'll execute it. It's like boom, 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 organizing all that. It's a position that prompts me to step up into my leadership qualities and prompts me to step up into my development as a person that controls my ego, you know? And it's like, I'm just supposed to be here. I'm a writer. I love writing. It's something that I care about. I care about language. I care about people when it comes to language, because here's the thing. If I say I did this interview with Jamie and Owen and it was dope, that conveys one thing. If I say I did this interview with Jamie and Owen and it was ridiculous, that conveys another thing. If I say I did this interview with Jamie and Owen, not even, because here, let's do this. Let's remove the word interview and let's say Jamie and Owen held space for me to be honest and available about my own experience within the review and within this particular piece. That says and conveys a whole other story about how this went down. And my thing is with language, we have the ability to put people first because our interpretation is always going to be there. But if we're focusing on putting that person's story first, if we're focusing on putting that person's story first, that will bleed through the language that is used. And again, like my goal is to do that every step of the way and make sure those voices shine through. And I think I'm supposed to be in that position. That's something that I really care about. That's something that I put myself in a position to practice when it comes to identities that I don't understand and communities that I don't understand and growing closer to balancing my own masculine and feminine energy so I can be a better human being, period, and allow that to bleed through the things I do. So I think as somebody that cares that much and like, I don't make mistakes and then not remember mistakes. I remember not texting Owen back last semester. I remember it very vividly. I remember not texting a bunch of people back because I was in this headspace where it was like, I don't think I can because, oh, it's too late and I don't know if I could be there for you. But wait, I'm not being there for myself. But I don't care about myself enough to put myself first. And it's like, I remember the consequences of my ego. And if I remember that and then I take hold of this mantle and these responsibilities, somewhere in there, I can carve out who I truly am and stay up to the task and up to the challenge of the work that I'm meant to do. So this is a role that I feel fits me well, and I'm supposed to be here.
Thank you for that answer. I really sincerely miss being an editor for the art section, but I'm so happy with the direction you and Anna have taken with it, and the section's in really great hands with you both. So has it been difficult to get enough content for the art section when so many events are remote this year?
It has been difficult, but Anna and I have been up to the task in terms of Anna utilizing her networks and myself utilizing my own networks and then being creative with stories, content, and the people that we reach out to. Like, I did an artist spotlight on six different people that have their own lives, six separate lives that are doing different plays. They're in bands. They do this. They have intentions here with the con. So that's six more stories I can get. And then they have their own networks. So it's really this beautiful butterfly effect of focusing again on the people and what they're doing and what they care about, and utilizing the networks that they've created and even strengthening them by, hey, can you ask this person what's up with this project and so on and so forth. And through that, it's like this effect of strengthening a community and bringing it closer, because I'm writing a story about your friends and your friend's friend and your friend's friend's friend. And you didn't know this about that person, and you get to connect to that person even more because that story now exists. So it works out.
Excellent. In these last minutes that we have, Is there anything else you'd like to add about your article, about the review, or anything else?
The role of the poet, and by poet, I mean all artists, is to critique the system, to understand it intimately and approach it in a way that is empathic to the people, and understand and recognize the system's effects on the people. If we are not positioning ourselves to critique how the system has affected us as creators and creatives, we are not only a product of a system, we are part of its parasitic nature to remove the agency from other peoples and cultures. So within my intentions of this position, it's to critique myself at every step of the way, so that when I'm prompted to critique someone else, I recognize that their actions are my own, as my own are a product of the system in the past. So it's my job to dream the future. It's my job to approach my sense of who I am 10, 20 years ahead so that I can get an idea of what my actions and my body looks like without the oppression of the system and with the empathy for the people.
That's a great note to end on. Thank you so much, Joshua, for your time and your energy and your insight. We loved having you on here, and we'd love to have you on again.
Amen. Ashe. I appreciate you. That was the wrong note. Amen. Ashe. Yes, that's more accurate. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much, Joshua. You're listening to WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. This has been The Weekly. All previously aired episodes of The Weekly are publicly available online. You can listen to them at anchor.fm/The Weekly.